Hello, Juno. You are listening to Juno Afternoon. It is the May 6th edition, and you are listening to KTOO. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. The weather today is mostly cloudy with a few sprinkles. Tonight, mostly clear. Tomorrow, sunny. Highs around 54. Northwest wind, 10 miles per hour. Our show is going to be a good one. We've got Grant Voice talking about Special Olympics and law enforcement's torch run. We've got someone on the phone who will talk to us about the 17th annual Spring King Salmon Derby, upcoming gardening events with Ed Boyarsky, and the Spring into Summer fundraiser at the Juno Family Health and Birth Center. All that, but first, let's go to National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, several communities in Saskatchewan are under flood emergencies, including First Nations. At one point, nearly a dozen reserves had declared a state of emergency. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
By mid-April, the big melt had begun, and with it, swollen lakes and rivers forcing people from their homes. One of the forecasted flood zones for this year was the Qu'Appelle Valley in south-central Saskatchewan. Native leaders say one of the problems they face is that any disaster relief money is channeled through a province-wide program and has left some specific needs on reserve lands unaddressed. Here's Chief Edmund Bellegard of the File Hills Qu'Appelle Tribal Council.
Communities do not have the road and sewer infrastructure for the drainage to properly handle flooding issues. So the impacts are even more compounding at a First Nations level.
The bands are now lobbying the federal government for help, saying the province's disaster assistance program is too slow and cumbersome. Bellegard also says some reserves' cash flow has become so low many are still waiting for assistance after flooding 3 years ago. Many are also grappling with mold problems, making homes unlivable, and can't deal with more damage. Meanwhile, flooding and sewer backups have plunged two northern Ontario First Nations, Attawapiskat and Keshechewan, into states of emergency. That's led to the evacuation of a hospital and the shutdown of schools, and that could lead to moving families off the reserves. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The National Congress of American Indians has released public comments submitted to the U.S. Department of State on the Keystone XL pipeline. The documents include a letter from NCAI and 14 pages of individual comments outlining concerns. It also includes Google Earth maps showing the proximity of the proposed pipeline to tribal nations. Native organizations and tribal communities across the United States and Canada have voiced concerns over the project to bring oil from Canada to the U.S. The documents were a response to federal plans released in March. Hundreds of visitors were in Wrangell, Alaska last week for the rededication of the Shakes Island Tribal House. Years of harsh weather damaged the 1940 structure. It's been rebuilt over the last few years. As KSTK's Shady Grove reports, the event got underway Thursday with the arrival of canoe groups.
A canoe from Wrangell led six other canoes to Shakes Island, where Tlingit clan leaders and elders waited to invite the visitors to shore.
Land your canoe here!
Washington's Burke Museum sent the original Chief Shakes pipe back to Wrangell for a private pipe ceremony on Friday evening. Saturday morning brought overcast skies and the rededication. The Tlingit clans were joined inside the tribal house by Haida and Tsimshian representatives from around southeast Alaska, as well as the Tahltan of Canada. Dancers in red and black regalia lined the walls of the room and performed a sway dance to pull the joints of the building together. Linda Churchill is one of the dancers. She says it was an incredible experience to hear the ceremony in the Tlingit language.
You know, just being in the building with those words being spoken of the old language, the way things used to be, that is still alive and coming back stronger, I think.
Ishmael Hope, whose Tlingit name is Kugwask, was a go-between for the Ravens during the ceremony. He says Wrangell has been trying to revitalize its native culture for a long time. And now, he says, the next generation will have another strong symbol of what that culture can be.
And also just the idea of looking inside a clan house and seeing a real clan house that's spiritually alive, you know, I think it can change people's lives.
For National Native News, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Native American healers and Western medicine practitioners will focus on the use of both healing methods this weekend at an annual event. The 32nd Medicine Ways Conference is being held at the University of California, Riverside, Saturday. Participants will discuss ways to promote the health of Native people. Speakers will address a number of issues involving physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. During this month in 1923, the 14-cent U.S. stamp was issued featuring an American Indian. The stamp was inspired by a photo of rural Sioux leader Hollow Horn Bear. The photograph was taken in 1905 when the chief was in Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of President Theodore Roosevelt. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I am your Monday host, Joan Pardis. I'm in the studio with Grand DeVust and Apisa Loma-Ia, Carl Brennert, and Sarah Heeb. And we're going to talk about the Special Olympics and the law enforcement torch run. But first up, let's talk about Special Olympics, which is Grant's specialty. So hi, Grant. Welcome.
Thank you. We're right in the middle of Special Olympics season. We had the local track and field games yesterday at Thunder Mountain High School, which Carl was involved in. Next week, we've got the basketball games coming up, local basketball games. That's going to be at Floyd Dryden Middle at 3 p.m. on May 11th. We'd love to see the community show up, cheer on our local athletes for this game before they go on to the state games in Anchorage, which are from June 7th through 9th, so later next month.
So how many athletes are here in town?
You know, I'm not sure the exact number of athletes, but we have a wide range of sports. We've got people that are running, walkers. We've got field games they're playing, basketball, swimming. So I'm not sure exactly what the number is if you added all those up, but quite a few.
Okay, how many participated yesterday in the track and field event?
Yesterday in the track and field, I think we had about a dozen people. I'm not sure the exact number of that either.
It sounds fun. So, Carl, you were involved with that event yesterday. Is this the first time you've done that event?
No. Well, first of all, I would like to say that no, because I have been in Special Olympics when I was 12 years old, and I've done track and field, walking, and also the standing long jump and the softball throw, and I also go to bowling, and I got a medal from that, second place. And I also do skiing and bowling. So, yes.
Wow. So how many years have you been involved?
Since when I was 12 years old.
Okay. And how old are you now?
34.
Wow. That's really impressive. It's really impressive. The wide range of things you do and how long you've been doing it. Wow, that's great. So that was yesterday, but coming up on Saturday, there's the basketball event, and Pete Maloma is one of the basketball athletes. So is this the first time you're participating?
I believe so, and I'll make that two.
Okay, second time.
And basically, basketball was my first sport ever, and before I used to take track and field way back home, and ever since I came to Juneau, I know I started joining basketball because I want to try something new for myself and to move forward in my life. So I got involved and finally made it to accomplish my dream, and I love the sports, and I'll never give up on the sports.
Wow, congratulations. So where is home, and how long have you been in Juneau?
I've been in Juneau right now. I'm going to be my third year right now, and basically from Hawaii, Oahu, Honolulu.
Great.
And I totally miss home, but I like it here better.
Okay, we all miss your home.
Yeah.
We all miss your home. So, 3 o'clock at Floyd Dryden this Saturday, And that'd be great. But Grant, let's talk about if you want to get involved, if you want to be a volunteer, or if you want to donate, how does this all work?
Sure. Well, the great thing about Special Olympics here in Juneau is all the coaches, all the people that are out there taking times during track and field, all, you know, the refs during basketball, it's all volunteer driven. So the cool thing is if you want to contribute Special Olympics in Juneau, it's all going to renting out wherever the sport's taking place. It's going to travel for the athletes if they're going to go to state games. So if you want to contribute to specifically Juneau Special Olympics, you can mail it to local P.O. Box 22124 and just make a check out to Special Olympics Juneau, and it'll get to the organization, and it'll, like I said, it'll go straight to the athletes and getting places for them to practice.
That sounds great. What if you want to donate your time? Is this do you need volunteers, or do you need special training?
There's always a need for volunteers, and it's great to see that. Right now, with the games wrapping up, I think we're pretty well set. But I don't have the point of contact. I don't have the phone number right now. But if you go on to like we have a Facebook page. If you go on there, ask about it. You can definitely track it down.
And that would be Juneau Special Olympics.
Yes.
The Facebook page.
And Alaska overall has a Special Olympics page, and there's plenty of contact information on there.
But it sounds like your season is wrapping up, so people could go check out the basketball game this Saturday at 3:00, and then if they want to get more involved, they could ask somebody there.
That'd be a perfect way to do
it. Or check it out for Facebook, because probably gear up again in the fall.
Certainly.
Okay. So Sarah Heeb is here to talk about the Law Enforcement Torch Run, which is May 18th at Twin Lakes at 10 a.m. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning.
Afternoon. Juneau afternoon. It's okay. And so 10 o'clock on the 18th on Twin Lakes. What is the old Law Enforcement Torch Run?
Well, it's been going on for about 25 years throughout the United States, and an officer, I believe it's in Kansas, got this idea and decided that he's going to support Special Olympics. And the way they're going to do that is they're going to have police officers come together and create the event and have a 5K fun run for the special athletes. And in conjunction with that, they created a pledge drive to help gain money to support the special athletes. So that's what we're doing everywhere in the United States on May 18th at 10 a.m. We are doing the torch run. We're collecting pledges right now, and anyone in Juneau can go out and collect the pledges. There's a pledge form online, and I give you the web address here in a minute. And then it culminates in that torch run where we all get together, we provide refreshments, coffee. I promise good weather, but I've never been able to actually get good weather for us that day, but I'm working on it.
I'm looking at the weather. It says cloudy, highs around 60. That sounds pretty darn good.
Yeah, so I'm hoping for good weather. Even if not, it's a lot of fun. It's a social event. The special athletes, they all come out for us. There's about 30 of them that show up consistently every year. I would love to get more Juneau people involved in coming down with some pledges. My goal this year is to not have any T-shirts left, so that I would love to be able to get rid of get pledges for those T-shirts, because for a minimum of $25 worth of pledges, you get a T-shirt. I'd love to be out of T-shirts so I could turn people away.
Okay, so this is open to any runner who wants to come and raise pledges. So how do people, if they say, yeah, I'm a runner, I'd love to do this, where do they sign up? How do they do it?
Well, they can go online to www.specialolympicsalaska.org, and there's a big poster on there that says Torch Run, and you can click on there, and there's a form that you can download, and you can print it off and go collect pledges.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to hit up your out-of-town friends, there's a way to create a first giving website that allows you to collect out-of-town pledges, which is an excellent idea. If they want to contact me directly, I can get them a pledge form, because I have that ability too. I have a pile of them in my office right now.
Okay, and what's the number to reach you?
I am at 321-5705, and more than willing to run out pledges or email, because I can do that also.
Right, and if you're a runner, you just have to raise $25, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
The minimum is $25 to participate?
You can participate without doing the pledges. It's a fun run.
Mm-hmm.
But for that $25 pledge, you do get a T-shirt. Mm-hmm. And a chance for our awesome door prizes.
All right. It sounds great. So that is 10 o'clock at Twin Lakes. Well, good luck on the basketball game, and thanks, everyone, for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's nobody else like me. As I can be, from my head to my toes, yeah, everyone knows there's nobody quite. quite like me. There's nobody else like me, as the world can plainly see. From the place I reside to the stories inside, there's nobody else like me. I can sing a song, la da 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 da, or play along, or whistle, or yodel, oh lady T. I love to joke and play. I'm learning new things every day, from tying my shoes to the things on the news. There's nobody else like me.
Hello, you're listening to KTOO, to Juno Afternoon, and on the telephone right now I have Laird Jones to talk about the 17th annual Spring King Salmon Derby. It's springtime. Hi, Laird.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. It's not raining. It looks like we're going to get some good weather. Everything is great in Juno today.
Right.
So, Laird, let's talk about the Derby. When does it start?
It started on May 1.
Whoa, and how long does it go for?
And it goes all the way through May 31 at 7 p.m.
Okay. So can you give me a little overview about the Derby? I mean, I've heard about the Derby in my 15 years that I've lived here, but I've never participated. Maybe next year will be the trick. But tell me a little bit about the overview about the Derby itself.
Well, the Derby itself, it's what it is. We're fundraising for scholarships that, you know, for students that are going to college. That so that they can, you know, just get some additional funding to go for their education. The Derby here, it's a little different than some of the others. Is you weigh them in at the weigh station, and you get to keep your fish. And the way we raise the money is, you know, we have donations from a lot of great businesses, local businesses, and companies here. For the prizes, both cash and merchandise, and then the funds that come in are from the sale of the tickets.
Okay, so if I join up and I say yes, I want to be in the Derby, my entry fee goes right toward the scholarships, and then people donate all the prizes that the big fish win. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And what are the boundaries of the Derby? Like, how far can you go?
Well, you can go, you can fish either off the shore or out of a boat. And the boundaries are on the north end, it's Point St. Mary at Berners Bay. On a west end, it's at Danger Point. On the south, it's Point Coverton. In the southeast end, we have Lizard Head just past Funner Bay, and on the southeast side, it's Twin Point over at Point Steinman. And we have a website. It's springkingderby.org, and it's got a map and of the boundaries, or it's also in the Derby handbook. You get one when you purchase your ticket.
Okay. Typically, if there is a typical number, how many people usually participate? Do you remember how many people, just the round number, that participated last year?
Well, we have, you know, kind of on average, you know, about 800 to 900 people purchase a ticket.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And how big are the fish? What have been one of the big winning fish sizes?
Well, over the last, let's see, 4 years, the largest fish was 39.25 pounds.
Wow. That sounds
last
great.
Year, last year was 38.4. It wasn't quite the biggest, but it was really close.
It is. And they get to keep the fish. And what kind of prizes? Like, what did that big fish scoop up last year?
Last year, the big fish took in, I think it was a little over $3,000. This year, first prize is $11,857.
Wow, that's terrific. And from the Derby, how many scholarships can you actually fund?
We've had,
just roughly.
You stumped me there.
I mean, does it go all to one person?
Oh, no, we have, I think there's about, I want to say like 40, at least 40 different scholarships that go out. And it's just kind of like everyone that applies by, you know, the deadline, you know, gets their application in. If they get everything in so they're qualified, then everyone gets the same amount. So it's evenly distributed out to the folks that apply.
Yeah. And is there an application process? Do they have to get their application in by this date already? Like, is this year wrapped up? Or if there's somebody listening who's thinking about college next year that they could apply?
You're getting real specific here.
We could go back to the fish.
15th. They still have time to get it in. And again, on our website, highered.org, there's the applications and the rules and application process. Basically, we need a transcript, you know, that they have to have a 2.5 or greater. They need to be accepted in a program, you know, in a certain degree program. They have to have a letter of admission from the college or university. And just to find out some information.
Yeah, that sounds great. And it sounds like a win-win for all the fishing enthusiasts. So your entry money goes to scholarships. You get to keep your fish, and almost $12,000 is the first prize. What are some of the other prizes in case, you know, you're not going to bring in the almost 40-pounder?
Well, we got second prize is all cash, $3,000. Third prize, cash, $1,500. Fourth prize, almost $1,150. Fifth prize is $1,087. And the 20th prize, the last one, is $500 cash.
Wow, that is terrific.
And in between, we have a lot of like different gift certificates from different companies that kind of tally up to the different prizes. And also, those are also on the website or in the booklet that you can pick up.
Okay, what's that website again?
Spring King Derby, all one word, .org.
Okay, so then you could find out how to register and what the prizes are and all the rules and everything you need to know.
That's correct.
That sounds great. Laird, anything else you want to add before we have to go on to our next guest?
Well, actually, a little breaking news here. We've got a new first place fish. Robert, Galau Jr., G-A-L-A-U, just turned in a 23.9-pound king, or weighed it in today. And so he's now into first place.
That's the fish to beat, almost 24 pounds.
That's almost 24 pounds, correct.
That sounds great. Well, with the good weather that we're supposed to be getting, it's time to register and get out on your boat or go from the shoreline and get some fish and get to keep it, maybe get a prize, and also fund some scholarships. Sounds like a great time. Sounds like spring in June, huh?
That's right.
All right. Thanks, Laird, for your time.
Good talking to you.
All righty. Thank you.
Bye now.
Packing up the truck, heading down the road. We're on a mission, we're going fishing. Pick a cool spot, unload all our gear, set up our poles and fish right here. Make the first cast, Right downtown. Get the line wet, it's fun, you bet. I could catch the biggest fish yet. I've been wishing I could go fishing. I'm so happy I'm going fishing. Here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 6th of May, 2013. The Works Progress Administration, created on this day, 1935, by Franklin D. Roosevelt, the biggest agency in the New Deal, employed about 8.5 million unemployed people, building roads and highways, repairing and constructing bridges, public buildings, parks, airport runways. It's the birthday of Orson Welles, born Kenosha, Wisconsin, 1915. At the age of 21, he was hired to direct a New York production of Macbeth. Went into radio, directed radio plays. It was his 1938 broadcast of War of the Worlds that made him internationally famous. 3 years later, Citizen Kane came out. He was the writer, producer, director, and the star of the movie. It didn't do great things at the box office, but now considered one of the greatest films in history. And then his career started to go south. He had a number of box office failures in the 40s, The Magnificent Ambersons, Journey into Fear, The Lady in Shanghai. Orson Welles, who said, "I started at the top and worked my way down." It's the birthday of Sigmund Freud, born in Freiburg, Moravia, now part of the Czech Republic, 1856. Lived in Vienna from the age of 4, then when the Germans occupied it, moved to London. Two of Freud's prize pupils, Alfred Adler and Carl Jung, broke with him. Adler believed that aggression, rather than sex, was the primary motivator of the human animal. Adler was the one who coined the term inferiority complex. Freud looked on Carl Jung as his natural successor, but Freud, who was an atheist, could not go along with Jung's focus on myth, mysticism, the collective unconscious. And it's the birthday of the novelist Gaston Leroux, born in Paris, 1868. He was a reporter and a theater critic, then took up fiction. He was fascinated with the Paris Opera House, which sits above a series of catacombs, jail cells, studied the blueprints of the building, knew it inside and out. And when a skeleton was discovered in the cellars, he began to write his novel of obsession and music, A Beauty and the Beast fable, The Phantom of the Opera, published in 1910, which is what we know him for in the English-speaking world, though Gaston Leroux did go on to cover the Russian Revolution and to write a whole series of detective novels. Here's a poem for today by Marge Sazer, Note to My Father After All These Years. Today I spent money, do dad this, do dad that, in a town in the sun, on the border. I sit outdoors with my doodad dog at the coffee shop. Time passes.
A man casts a shadow across my latte, asks if he can borrow my lighter for a minute. I have none, but he talks to me anyway, generous with conversation, his tattooed hands giving my dog some good attention. I can't see his eyes, only the dark of his sunglasses. His unlit cigarette bobs in his lips as he talks. This, or something, reminds me of you. He says, the people here are nice. He loves it here. Says it's way better than the big city. It's all money, anyways. Every time he left the house, it was $40. He sees someone across the street, waves his arm, shouts, Jack, I'm free. He rises. He's gone. Note to my father, After All These Years, by Marge Sazer, from Losing the Ring in the River, published by University of New Mexico Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, whose Reputation Defender service is designed to help businesses and professionals improve their search results. You can learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. Produced by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's that time of year again when the National Association of Letter Carriers, the United States Postal Service, and you work together to help stamp out hunger. All you have to do is put non-perishable food items in, on, or near your mailbox on Saturday, May 11th, before your mail carrier comes to deliver. No glass items, please. That's it. Your mail carrier will do the rest. They will collect your food donations and deliver them to the local food banks. Thanks for helping to stamp out hunger on Saturday, May 11th.
Support comes from GCI. Connecting Juneau to the World Wide Web for news, information, and entertainment. Serving Juneau in two locations, downtown on Sewer Street and in the Valley. GCI, connecting Alaskans for 30 years.
Hello, you are listening to KTOO, Juneau Afternoon. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. I'm chatting here with Ed Byarski, one of our many, many very knowledgeable sources about gardening here in Juneau. He's also the owner of Ed's Edible Landscape, and we're going to talk about the super plant sale that's happening this Saturday. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the studio.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for getting out of your garden and joining us today.
I didn't change clothes, but I did take a little break.
That's good. So let's start with the super plant sale, and then we'll jump right into, like, what should we be doing right now as far as gardening. But the super plant sale is this Saturday at 11. It's at Safeway. It's an institution. It's a spring institution here.
Almost.
In June.
It's at 9 o'clock.
What time did I say?
9 o'clock till noon.
9 o'clock till noon. And this is a fundraiser for the Juneau Garden Club, the Juneau 4-H Club, Juneau Community Garden, and Friends of Jensen Olson Arboretum, along with lots of vendors come and give 10%. We were talking about that. How does...
Yes. Other folks who are... These groups will all be selling plants, trees, shrubs, perennials and such, annuals, herbs. But other people who may have extra plants from their garden, too many primroses, raspberries, or whatever, or some of us businesses, my business as well as David Lendrum's Landscape Alaska, will be there to sell plants to benefit us, and then we will give 10% of our proceeds to the nonprofits to support their activities.
Sounds great. And so when you go to this super plant sale, you also have plenty of expert advice on hand to say, oh, I need this for this type of zone, or I don't even know what zone I live in as far as a gardening zone.
Yes, and that's really the big benefit there of talking to people who know about local gardening as opposed to those at the big box stores who don't know much about local gardening. If you really want to get some advice, 9 o'clock is not the best time to ask because it is honestly a bit of a madhouse at that time. If you can hang around till 10, once things quiet down a bit, then you can hopefully get a hold of one of the different, well, our extension agent should be there, master gardeners, garden club people, and others should be there to answer questions while our minions are taking care of sales and other stuff.
Okay. Speaking of expert advice, what should people be doing right now? So we just went through this very interesting weather pattern. There's a forecast. You agree that it was a very interesting weather pattern?
15 inches of snow on my garden last weekend? Yeah, that's interesting. At the last week of April, that I've never seen that before.
15 inches of snow. Wow.
I live out the road near Tea Harbor, so it was a lot deeper, and it got deeper farther out from there. But it's gone now. So, and the weather wizards are telling us we're going to get 50s and 60s this week through Saturday or Sunday at least. And there's going to be a lot of sore bodies by Sunday or Monday morning because we are going to be out there working, cleaning, digging, planting. I hate to say it, working on that four-letter word lawn. But it is a time when if you haven't done the cleanup work you should have done last fall, need to do that. Cover gardens with clear plastic to warm the soil. That's really the most important thing right here is warming the soil up. Mother Nature will help us with the sun this week. You can mix in the fertilizer at the same time as you do your cleanup work. And then as people get their either starts or it's time, start putting seeds in the ground, potatoes in the ground, lettuce seeds. I'm going to be planting carrots. I did plant beets and potatoes already along with some leeks. So a lot of it can go in the ground now. But again, if you're buying plants from somewhere or if you, like me, have been growing them indoors, you want to gradually harden them off, gradually get them used to the outdoor conditions before they go out there permanently.
Right. And when you say that, what do you mean by gradual? Is that like, oh, it's sunny out, I'll put it out for 2 hours, or no matter what it's like out, you just put them out for a set amount of time?
Sunny is actually more stressful on them. Better if it's cloudy, or if you provide them with some shade, or there's some thin horticultural fabric. Rime is one brand of it. Actually having a layer or two of that out there on top of the plants. It's very lightweight. But again, rather than putting them in the sun, put them in a shady spot, because they can be sunburned if you're taking them from in the house where they may have been underneath fluorescent lights for a month or two. Direct sun is too bright. So you want to do this for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. And then, again, getting used to different, more variable temperatures, too. In the house, it's been 65 to 70. Outdoors, it may be 40 to 65.
So along with the gradual, as far as how long they're exposed each day, how long before you actually say, okay, you're going to go in the ground now?
4 or 5 days to a week is often enough. Not that long. So again, if you've been planning ahead, I mean, I've been pulling stuff out of the house just past weekend, seeing the forecast and trying to get them used to it on my porch on the shady side. So they can gradually get used to that. And hopefully that some of that stuff's going in the ground or else.
Okay. So, Ed, in front of you here, right by the mic in the studio, you have a rosemary plant. Why is this rosemary plant at the studio today?
Well, it's a reminder. You know, you've probably heard the phrase about don't forget to smell the roses. Well, if you believe it, smelling rosemary is supposed to help you remember things, which I can use all the help I can get on that one. But anyway, it is one of the many herbs that will be available at the plant sale. And it's something that can go usually into pots, say on a deck or on your porch. Rosemary won't normally overwinter outdoors. I have to bring mine into my cool garage in a window to overwinter it. But there's other herbs that do just fine in the ground outdoors, like oregano and chives do well. Some thyme will overwinter well, and there are others too. Tarragon, if you can find it. It's kind of a challenge to find. So again, some of them, parsley is an annual. So again, plant it in a pot where you can, handy location where you can walk out before dinner and cut some off and toss it into whatever you're cooking for the night.
Sounds great. If you're just joining us, this is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Joan Pardes, your Monday host, and I'm talking to Ed Bajarski of Ed's Edible Landscape about gardening. So before we go, we're going to have to go in just a little bit. I want to talk to you about like different gardening levels. Let's say you're a neophyte. What are the easiest things you should do? And what if you're an intermediate? What should you plant? And if you have a little more experience under, you know, because gardening seems to be an experiment that the really talented gardeners that I know, they are knowledgeable and they definitely have, they're tuned in to their gardens, but it's still an experiment. So if you're like a neophyte, like myself, what would be like, is it potatoes and carrots and leeks, that type of thing? And then if you have a little more experience, or do you not even think like that?
Well, really the most important thing for any of us, new gardeners or continuing mature gardeners, we'll call us, and is the soil. Got to have good soil, good drainage, ideally sunshine if Mother Nature cooperates. That's, soil is the most important thing. So improve your soil first. Then from there, you can grow a whole lot of stuff, the cool weather greens, spinach and lettuce and Swiss chard, the cool weather cold crops, cabbages and broccoli and cauliflower are great. Peas, I mean, I was planting peas this morning. So edible potted peas, cool weather stuff. And like you mentioned, the potatoes and carrots are really great. Potatoes are certainly the most tonnage of plants grown in Alaska. Carrots, incredibly tasty and flavorful. And then if you've got a sunny window or a small greenhouse, think about some of the more challenging stuff like tomatoes, peppers, eggplants. We've got to have sun for those. Last year was mediocre to poor. We are an optimistic bunch. We will have more sun than last year. Let's hope. That's really what it takes. But if you're going to be a dedicated gardener, sometimes you're out there in your rubber suit and pulling weeds and encouraging the plants.
It's true. It's true. And with the tomatoes, does it matter what variety? Would you do like a dwarf? Would it be better to do like little tomatoes, cherry tomatoes? Read
the label. Are they early tomatoes? For us in Juneau, in southeast Alaska, we need tomatoes that bear fruit early. Mostly, we see the heirloom tomatoes. They are incredibly tasty if you find some, if you're growing down south somewhere. But for us, we need varieties that are going to ripen in 50 or 60 days. And so it's read the labels. If you started them yourself, hopefully you know that. But again, read the package, the seed packets or the labels that say how long they take, and then add 20 to 30% to that for our conditions, because you just have to. Peas are about the only thing, or radishes or spinach, that actually do produce as the calendar says on the package.
I hear kale does really well.
Kale is great. I mean, kale is something that's easy to grow, and I grow large quantities. Red Russian is my favorite for flavor and ease of growth. There's lots of different kinds and colors of kale, and there's lots of stuff you can do with it. We use it primarily in fresh, in salads, but soups and stews and dried and kale chips, and I've had kale and chocolate cookies and brownies and... People are putting kale in a lot of strange things.
So the plant sale is Saturday at the Safeway parking lot at 9 o'clock. We've been talking to Ed Byarski from Ed's Edible Landscape. If you want to glean some more of his knowledge, feel free to give him a buzz at 789-2299. And also, Ed, you usually do some gardening classes. Are those over for the year?
There aren't any really ongoing now. I helped Darren Schneider, our Cooperative Extension Service, back in January and February with some basic classes. For folks who want to become a master gardener, contact the Extension Service. Put yourself on the list for coming ones, which usually happen during the wintertime. And there are other gardening activities from the Open Gardens Day at the Jensen Olsen Arboretum last weekend in May, and Chris Chadwell, a British seed collector, plant traveler, will be coming to Juneau the 1st and 2nd of June. More advertising will follow on that one. And hopefully there will be garden tours sometime this summer.
All right. Ed, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometime. When you take, you gotta give. So live and let live or let go. Oh, I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose. I could promise you things like big diamond rings, but you don't find roses growing on stalks of clover. So you better think it over. Well, if sweet talking you could make it come true, I would give you the world right now on a silver platter. Pardon. I never promised you a rose garden. I could sing you a tune and promise you the moon, but if that's what it takes to hold you, I'd just as soon let you go. But there's one thing I want you to know. You better look before you leap, still waters run deep, and there won't always be someone there.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon, the May 6th edition. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Here in the studio is David Summers, a member of the board of the Juno Family Health and Birth Center, to talk about their spring into summer fundraiser this weekend. Hi, David.
Hi, good afternoon. It's good to be here.
Oh, thanks for joining us. So tell me a little bit about this annual fundraiser that's taking place this Saturday.
Well, it is our annual fundraiser, and so it's at the Juno Family Health and Birth Center, which it's on Salmon Creek Lane, which is up sort of, just north of the hospital up behind there. So what we're going to do, it's dinner, so you can come and we're going to feed you. Last year, I think we had fish and chicken and a handful of good dishes. It's catered, so there's a dinner. And then also we take that time for people that are familiar with the birth center, who know some of the staff, or maybe for people who aren't familiar with it, who want to come and sort of get to know the place. We have updates from the staff who will talk about some of the things that are going on. We usually recognize some of the significant people in the, associated with the organization who have done some things over the year. We also have a very popular dessert auction, which is a lot of fun, and we even do something so that we try to make sure some kids get some desserts and that kind of thing. It's a lot of fun. And we have, of course, a silent auction. You know, there's so many organizations in this town that step up to the plate at most of the fundraisers if you go to these things. But we're very, very pleased with the support we get. So there is a silent auction, and it's a great opportunity for people to maybe get something that they might not otherwise get, or maybe even get a better deal than they might otherwise get. And it goes to support our organization and our programs.
Okay, so that's this Saturday of 5 to 9 at the Health and Birth Center, but let's
Correct.
Talk a little bit about where these funds go. So tell,
sure.
Can you talk a little bit about the services that the Juno Family Health and Birth Center has?
Absolutely. Well, the primary function, of course, our most obvious thing is that we have midwifery services. Our midwifery clinic there provides anybody, quite frankly, especially all over Southeast and here, an opportunity to come to the birth center and get prenatal care up to and post-birth, which is an interesting thing that I might want to mention, that even if there's a person, let's say that a mother or a family, they might choose to have their child, let's say, in hospital, that's fine with us. We have the opportunity at the birth center to provide care, prenatal care and post care for them, even if they choose to have that. And that would include doula support. So we have a doula program, which most mothers, the mothers of my children found this, and the ones that I talk to find that to be one of the most important things, is their relationship with their doula as they go through that process.
Let's talk a little bit about doula services, because
mm-hmm.
in the last 5 years it's become a pretty common word.
Sure.
But do you want to explain what that is?
Sure. Well, a doula will provide support throughout the process, which when I say process, for prenatal care and up to and during birth. And so a doula would not only sort of be a gateway or a helper to connect with the actual, maybe some of the technical aspects, at like a midwife would actually care for that, but also maybe she would come to your home, maybe she would help connect you with some of the other services you made, like connect you up with a massage. She would also maybe also more of a confidant and a friend during that time in many ways for many women. Of course, I'm a father. I have two children, but I didn't have a baby. But they what I saw was that they were just invaluable throughout that process. And there are quite a few people who go, I think, through the entire birth process, but certainly mothers and fathers who've said the same thing to me all along the way over the years. So that's certainly one of the services that's really important. There's also, of course, for free, there's pregnancy classes, birth classes, parenting classes. That's all something that we do just as part of this kind of what we call our strength and family program. And then there's also yoga classes that we have. There's yoga for women who are pregnant. There's yoga. There's like this mommy and me type yoga where you can do it with your kids. There's new parents and toddler groups. So I've even seen where people have moved to the community after recently having a child somewhere else, and they will come to the birth center with their toddler or young child, and we have certain classes with them. We have some single parenting classes that are going on now. That's much more prevalent. We have a lending library where either prospective parents, maybe even there's people who are just thinking about having a child, maybe they're not even pregnant yet, could come to the lending library and borrow books and get to know some things.
So it's a wide array of services.
Absolutely.
Where can people find out? So if they heard something that you just said was like, ooh, that sounds interesting, where can they go?
Sure. Well, we have a website. It's junobirthcenter.org. And if someone was just to want to Google that and they just thought, hey, babies or birth and Juno, it would come up fairly quickly. You could also come by. We have a phone number, 586-5765, that you could call. And our executive director, Susan Jabal, would be happy to make arrangements for somebody to see that. We also have opportunities for people to meet doulas or midwives just in that part of that beginning of that journey. And again, for anyone who's even just considering getting pregnant or already pregnant, it's certainly something that we would like to have them come and take a look at.
Sounds great. How long have you been on the board?
Well, let's see. So about 3 years now I've been on the board of directors, in partnership with Bartlett Beginnings. Both my kids were born with some of the services at both. That was also my path. And I have friends and people around town, of course, that have been gone through the birth center. So I really am looking forward to this Saturday's event. It's a fun event. It's 5 to 9. It's at the birth center. It's $20. Kids that are 12 and under can come for free. And again, you know, I see a lot of fundraising. I go to quite, but for $20 and it's dinner, and we'll even give you a complimentary adult beverage if you're an adult too. And so that's this weekend, and we're really looking forward to it. It should be a big event, event for us.
It sounds great. And you have ongoing classes. The center has ongoing classes going on right now. So if people want to look into it, they could check
absolutely
out online.
Absolutely. Anytime. They can look online. They can give us a call. I'm starting to find that it's almost like becoming a retroactivity to just drop in. Just come by. You know, we'll make sure that somebody can show you around, or call or email us, and we can make the arrangement ahead of time.
That sounds great for that type of service.
Yeah.
So just drop by and see who the people
it's
are.
It's nice. And, you know, I'll tell you, everyone that I've spoken to, when you walk through the facility, you just get it's very homey. It's very sort of has a sense of almost like family when you're there. And by design, it's a very, not just a nice place, and certainly a fully functioning birth center, but also it's very homey and very family environment sort of. And we, of course, and I forgot to mention, too, that we even do in-home births. We have doula support and midwifery support for people that may choose to do that kind of birth as well.
That sounds great. So I'm chatting with David Summers, who's on the board of directors for the Juno Family Health and Birth Center, about that fundraiser this Saturday at 5 to 9 at the center, which is above the hospital. Sounds like a really good time.
Yeah, and the weather might be good, so we tend to go out in the parking lot there, you know, and eat outside. It's kind of fun. Hopefully we'll cross our fingers. I was, you know, hoping that'll hold out.
Well, that's good to know that you could be outside
yeah.
and go. So, and then you were talking a little bit about a fun run coming up later this
week. Yeah, the following Saturday is our fun run. It's in we work with Southeast Roadrunners to make this happen, and that's going to be it's the Salmon Creek. It's our second annual run. So a lot of people maybe you're hearing about it for the first time. That's next Saturday, and that's going to take place from the Birth Center up to Salmon Creek, the dam area, and back. It's a lot of fun. I'm sure maybe we'll even come back next week and remind everybody about some of the details about that. But that's a great fun run that we're going to have next Saturday in the morning.
Okay, and is that something that people get pledges for the Bird Center or do the entrance fees?
There is a fundraiser element to it, but it's really new and something we're sort of just starting. There's a fee, and usually there's some things associated with that. But right now we're just raising awareness about the event. And, you know, there's some dedicated runners in this town. I mean, I'm one of them and try to show up as many events as possible. And so we thought, well, why not? Let's do something with them. And so, yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for dropping by today.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
This is Bird Note. These rich, caroled phrases are among the best-loved and most widely heard in North America. This superb song belongs to perhaps our most familiar bird, the American robin. As singers go, the robin is exceptional. They're often the first birds to sing in the morning, starting well before dawn, and the last you'll hear in the evening, holding forth into deep twilight. Robins also begin singing earlier in the year than most birds, often in midwinter. And robins can be remarkably long-winded. While their average song strings fewer than a dozen short phrases together and lasts a few seconds, robins sometimes sing for minutes without a pause. But the most extraordinary measure of robin song is its variety. In each song, a robin sings a varied selection from a repertoire of 10 to 20 different caroling phrases. Then, as evening comes on, the same robin interweaves these phrases with exquisite whisper-like notes from its personal treasury of 75 to 100 different whispered notes. The potential song variety is amazing. The musical results, enchanting. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
This is Dr. Russ Bowman. As a physician, I've seen the damage from secondhand smoke firsthand. For example, being exposed to secondhand smoke for 8 hours is like smoking a pack of cigarettes. That means kids, family members, and employees are all at increased risk for cancer, heart disease, and other life-threatening illnesses. There is no risk-free level of secondhand smoke exposure.
Brought to you by the Partnership for a Smoke-Free Southeast.
Hello, this is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We are listening to some beautiful music, and there's beautiful music all over town for the next 7-8 days, Juno Jazz and Classics. Tune in tomorrow. Pat Moore, the host for Tuesdays, will be talking to Evan Drachman and Richard Dowling. We'll also be talking to Christina Apathy about her one-woman play. Wednesday's Pillar of America speaker, Captain J. Charles Plum, will get a review on that. And Auk Bay Elementary School teacher, Allie Smith, will be in the studio to talk to Pat about Saturday's pansy sale at the Auk Bay Elementary. But as far as the weather is concerned, the rest of today is mostly cloudy with a few sprinkles. Tonight, mostly clear, patchy fog late, lows around 34. Tomorrow, sunny, highs around 54, northwest wind 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows around 35. Wednesday, partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny, highs around 60. Wednesday night and Thursday, mostly cloudy, lows around 36. Highs around 61, and then it looks like sun for the weekend. So we were talking with Ed Byarski, one of the many gardening gurus in Juneau, so get out and get planting. Tonight, 7 o'clock, join Dr. Elaine Schroeder on Mind Over Matter. She's got Mark Wheeler, a researcher for Big Brothers and Big Sisters, talking about kids. Then on KRNN, we've got Tidelines with KDB at 5, 7 o'clock, Garden of Love with Jane. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Off Bay area, tune to K276AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org.
Because of the Defense of Marriage Act, the federal government has been unable to confer immigration benefits to the partners of American citizens.
The push for same-sex marriage benefits in the new immigration bill.
It's Monday, May 6th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Alyssa Block. Coming up, new questions about whether the issue of same-sex marriage will be a stumbling block to immigration overhaul.
And freshman Senator Jeff Flake faces backlash over his vote against gun background checks.
Also, the body of Boston bombing suspect Tamerlan Tsarnaev is being rejected for burial. Poet and undertaker Thomas Lynch tells us why that shouldn't be.
If we don't care for humans, dead humans, the way that humans do, we become less human in our refusal.
And crowdfunding comes to the rescue of the gondolas in Venice.
That's coming up. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Senate lawmakers, by a 69-27 vote, have approved a measure to give states the power to enforce their sales tax laws on purchases made online. Lawmakers, including Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, saying they want to level the playing field and provide revenue for states.
What we are asking in this bill is that those selling on the Internet be treated just the same as those selling on the corners of our streets.
However, opponents of the tax, like New Hampshire Democrat Jean Shaheen, say the measure will have the opposite effect.
We are creating a bureaucratic morass for small businesses under this legislation.
In the end, it may not matter. Republicans in the House